Hello, welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day. In today's podcast, we're going to talk about something a little bit different. In fact, you might say we're not even going to talk about tax, and that's because we're going to talk about customs duty. Now, customs duty is what people pay when goods are imported into Canada. It is like a tax in the sense that it's levied by the government on all of the goods coming into our country, but the rules are a little bit different. And to help lead the discussion, we're joined today by Maureen Guilfoy, the director of Ryan's customs duty practice in Canada, as well as Sebastian Drozdrejewicz, a senior manager, and Jolene Lim, a customs consultant in the same practice. Welcome to the podcast, everyone.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Sebastian, how did I do with your last name?
You did pretty well.
I have a simple name. Yeah. I have a two-syllable name total. Mm-hmm. I think you have about seven, so I apologize if I didn't get that quite right.
No, you got it right. I thank my dad all the time, every day. I see him for giving me this blessed last name. So no, it is a tough one, and it's always been a tough one for everyone. And so yeah,
very good. I think we can maybe start with the importance of customs duty compliance. I think there's kind of a misconception out there, particularly amongst some importers that use a broker, that they can just let the broker kind of handle the whole customs duty and import process and that everything will be okay. But I don't think that's always true. Can you comment on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me personally, in simplest terms, customs compliance is a practice of respecting and following customs rules and regulations. You know, and at the same time, it is importers and exporters' liability in meeting all of these requirements, right? So as part of becoming more compliant, an importer should definitely not only rely on their broker, but also implement internal processes and programs to avoid the non-compliance exposures, right? So ultimately, the onus is on the importer, okay? And the broker would simply say, Mr. Importer, we told you so, right? So it is very important that an importer should implement internal processes, checks and balances, to avoid any of those non-compliance exposures, right? So it is also interesting to note that each year CBSA releases, the trade compliance verification priority list, right? So basically the CBSA manages the trade compliance by conducting reviews and audits and verification in three main areas of potential non-compliance exposure, right? One would be through the tariff classification, one would be through the valuation and origin, right? So free trade agreements between Canada and other nations, right? So now these verification priority are done through a random verification, or they could also be implemented under the verification priority list, right? So, the random verification are simply designed to measure compliance, the rate and revenue lost that could potentially impact the government, and they can also use, so CBSA also uses the results of each verification for risk assessments, revenue assessment, and it's really to promote compliance for the import community, right? So,
yeah, I mean, really good points. Go ahead, Maureen. You have something to
add? Yeah, I was just going to say, another important thing to remember too is all of that information that is submitted to CBSA, that's how we capture our trade statistics. So as a country, we want to know what that is. When we go to negotiate another trade agreement with another country, we want to be aware of what those trade stats are. What's the volume? What are the products that are being imported into Canada? What's the value of that? Mm-hmm. I think that's really important too, that the compliance now has been turned around, that it's up to the importer. It's the importer who knows their products. They know exactly what they've received, how much they've received, and what they've paid for those goods. So when the broker is preparing all of that information and submitting it to CBSA, it really is up to that importer to ensure that that information is accurate.
Yeah, I mean, really good point. It sounds to me like the misconception might be coming from the fact that your broker might help you handle some of these requirements. But the fact is, as the importer, it's that entity that could be held liable for the customs duty that does or doesn't get paid.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So very, very interesting. And it sounds like there's three main components, right? It's valuation, origin. And what was the third one?
Classification.
And classification, I know we're going to talk about a little bit later on because it can be tricky sometimes.
Absolutely.
Right. Very good. I know back in the spring, CBSA, the Canada Border Services Agency, introduced something called the CARM program. And I think CARM stands for CBSA Assessment and Revenue Management Initiative or something like that. How's the uptake on that program been? And is there anything that an importer should consider before signing up for that program?
Well, actually, this is not really a program. CARM actually was introduced in 2016, in early 2016. And actually, the purpose of this program is to actually help the agency simplify and streamline the assessment and collection of revenue from importers and also to automate the key business processes. So within the CARM, there is a mechanism that called the ARL, which stands for Accounts Receivable Ledger. And this actually helps to centralize the accounting system that will allow the offsetting of account credits against the debits offer the trade, the TCP, the Trade Change Partners, more comprehensive accounting statements and new electronic payments option. So within the ARL, there's actually a statement that is issued on the 25th of every month, and that will actually document all the imports of that the importers bring in. So it actually documents the debits owing that is due to CBSA on at the end of the month. And if you do have any refund situation, then the credits will also be shown on your statement, and that will actually be used to offset your debit owing. And then instead of remitting the full amount of the your debit owing, it actually allows you to use your credit to actually offset the debit owing, and that. And you can just remit the net amount owing to CBSA. So this is the whole idea of the CARM project. The latest initiative was actually launched this spring on May 25th this year. And it actually launched the online portal, which allows importer to actually set up your portal, which is very similar to your My Account within CRA. So at the moment with this portal, it allows you to actually retrieve your statement of account on the 25th of every month. So then you don't have to rely on your broker to actually advise you what is your debit owing due to CBSA. So on the 25th of every month, you just log into your portal and you can actually download your own statement and you can have a clear visual of what is your actual owing to CBSA. So the only thing is to set up this portal, you might need your broker's help to set it up because there's some security question which is related to your latest imports. So you might need to get that information from your broker. And also, the reason why this portal is launched is because next year in the spring, there will be a second phase of release too. And at that point, the importer will be fully responsible to import your own goods under your own release bond. So you no longer can use your custom broker to clear your goods. And but with the portal, you can give access to your custom broker to actually go into your portal to release your goods. So So which is why there's a one-year period where CBSA is actually now encouraging all the importers to set up your portal so that you'll be ready by next year spring when the second phase is launched, and you will not be caught off guard. And because when it's launched, your custom broker can no longer clear their goods under the custom broker release bond. You have to use your own release bond to import your goods. So that is the latest initiative under the CUM project.
So it sounds like the advantages are mostly administrative. Like that's the main benefit, I guess, to somebody who signs
towards
up
the agency,
for the portal.
Yeah, right. Right.
And obviously the advantage for the CRA, CBSA is easier to track sort of the duty that should be paid.
Right.
Collected,
yes.
And keep
everything
tabs on their accounts.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So I guess the initiative is leading towards paperless, everything electronic, and also everything is adjusted through your statement. So there's no more issuing of the refund checks. Because it's also a hassle, right, to issue the refund check, and sometimes you get lost in the mail, and then you have to request for a replacement. So now the agency is trying to streamline all this paperless.
Well, this seems like a far cry from all the customs forms and papers that used to fly around the office in the old days. Is this the direction CBSA is heading? Like, are we expecting more and more things to be done electronically in the customs clearing process?
So. Yes, we think so. I think ultimately, even following the B2 refund claim, they are trying to do it electronic through the portal eventually. Yes. Because now encouraging you to submit your advance ruling request through the portal also. So I think they are now slowly introducing all the mechanism to allow you to do a lot of things through your portal. And even you can remit your payment through your online portal. So I think this is the direction that, the agency is heading towards, everything electronic.
Yeah, paperless.
Sebastian, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I think that everyone's going paperless, and I believe that CBSA is kind of leaning towards that way as well. So just to add to Jolene here, once fully functional, the CARM portal will give importers the ability to kind of manage their own import account, view their daily notices and monthly statements of accounts, pay their duties and taxes directly to CBSA, avoiding that whole broker is going to take care of the payment for us, right? File any corrections or adjustments. So, any B2s or any adjustments that are due for customs entry can be corrected and can be submitted directly on the portal. An importer can also apply for permits and special advanced customs rulings as well, right? So it's kind of an interesting tool, and it is kind of high tech. It's very similar to what US currently uses. US uses something called ACE, which is an online portal as well. And a US importer can, submit their entries, view their daily accounts, pay their duties and taxes. So, and I think Canada is kind of going the same direction here. So,
very interesting. Like I said, it sounds like quite a change from just a few years ago, where it seemed like they wanted the paper in place to sort of track everything. And I know many of our clients were still filing certain forms had to be printed out and filed. So that sounds like quite a change. You mentioned that an importer in the program could basically use an electronic method to file a pricing adjustment. And Maureen, I definitely wanted to ask you, or ask all of you actually, about transfer pricing adjustments. And I know one issue that's come up over the years is that a lot of importers are unaware, where they have a transfer pricing agreement in place, that even though that value under that agreement is used as the valuation for duty on the original import, if there's an adjustment afterward, or sometime after the fact, there's also an obligation, isn't there, for the importer to make an adjustment to that value for duty, which could potentially change the amount of duty owing?
Absolutely. And it's not only just for transfer price adjustments. We can even sum it up as saying any kind of an adjustment and a change to that import. So if we talk about valuation, so transfer price is just a small component of a valuation adjustment. But let's just zero in on the transfer pricing. So transfer pricing will be used for the goods at the time of import to value those goods. Duty and the GST will be calculated on those, on that price. At the end of the year, many, many related parties will go through what they call transfer price adjustments, whether it be an upward adjustment or a downward adjustment. It is the importer's responsibility to make those values adjusted through that whole period. So whether you do an annual adjustment or a quarterly adjustment. And when it comes to your attention, basically you, the importer, you have 90 days to make that adjustment. So if we only import duty-free goods, and then of course there's an upward adjustment, there's going to be additional GST that's going to have to be paid. What if it's a downward adjustment and it's duty-free still? There's no GST credit, but it's still your obligation, because what we talked about prior was trade statistics. So this really affects the values of the imports that are coming into Canada. So it's the importer's obligation whether there's any kind of a change. So when we take that away from transfer pricing, when the broker is clearing the goods, they basically have the value that's in front of them, and that's the value that they're showing. Afterwards, when it goes through finance, it gets matched to a purchase order, which then may get matched to a shipping document. That's when that invoice is paid to the vendor. If there's any adjustments on that invoice to the vendor, absolutely, the importer is responsible to adjust those import entries. It's very important.
And that can create like a liability or potentially an opportunity for recovery?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So let's say that there was some adjustments that were made on a number of imports on the values. All of a sudden, those entries are flagged as part of an audit, which we're going to talk about a little bit later with the hit list. If those entries are part of the sampling, and then customs is looking at that and saying, well, you declared this amount, but they're going to ask for the further backup. They're going to ask for some of those financial commercial invoices that were paid, proof of payment. And right there, you are going to have a liability. Absolutely. Or like you said, maybe even a refund. You pay duty on a higher value. It's a little bit more difficult to try and get credits on that after the fact, but it's possible for sure.
Go figure, eh? It's tougher to adjust the value down than it is to bring it up.
Yes, absolutely. And that goes to...
I guess customs duty is a lot like taxes in that sense.
Yeah. Well, that's just... It's interesting, too, when companies are being audited and it's found that they do owe money, they do have an obligation to have that adjusted and paid. But every once in a while, they might find a credit, but there's no obligation on the importers to file for credits. And it specifically states that in the final verification letter. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm learning is that the value as the goods come across the border may not be the final value. I mean, there might be an that's obligation right. there to make an adjustment after the fact. So that's valuation. And you mentioned another important element of customs duty compliance is... tariff classification. Now, I haven't done it often, but I've looked at the tariff code a few times, and it is a complicated piece of legislation. The level of detail they go to, in coming up with the tariff classifications is quite astounding. I remember a customs consultant once threw me a little miniature football, and he said, "What do you think this is?" And I said, "Well, it's a football." And he said, "Really? I don't think it's a football. I think it's a toy." And he went on to explain that the football he threw me didn't have a bladder in it, so it couldn't be refilled with air. And it wasn't regulation size, and it wasn't of the quality normally expected of a sporting good. And all the other various reasons why he thought little plastic football is actually a toy and not, you know, a football that would be used in sports. And I think his point was, it makes a difference, right? Whether that's a toy or a sporting good could affect, the tariff classification, which of course would influence the amount of duty that need to be paid on the goods. So I found that very fascinating. Can any of you comment sort of on, how these the tariff classification can be so tricky, and you know, what kind of opportunities does that create for an importer?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, Jim.
That's a great example, actually. So just to kind of, you know, put things in perspective, customs tariff is written in such a very complex text. There's 99 chapters of the tariff itself with 21 different sections. And there's so many different tariff classification ranging from, you know, live goods, raw materials, to finished products, machinery, and such. So for classification purposes, I think it's really important that, you know, an importer or, you know, a trade compliance or consultant, you know, should look into, you know, safety data sheets, product literature, bills of material. I think a lot of it, you know, would kind of assist with the tariff classification. You know, as an example, you know, let's take a textile, a jacket, for example. You know, there's a whole chapter on textile. Textiles are dutiable at 16% to 18% duty, right? However, if that jacket is coated with heavy plastic, it could potentially be reclassified to Chapter 39, and right away you have a duty reduction of 6.5%. Okay, so, but in order to get there, you would need to get sample of the jacket. You would need to even cut the jacket in pieces to see exactly how much coating is actually put on that jacket. It could be plastic, it could be rubber, you know what I mean? So for classification purposes, you might have a jacket, but it's kind of listed in various different chapters and headings of the tariff itself, right? So you could have it in chapter 61 under textiles, or you could have it in chapter 40 under rubber. It really kind of depends what's it made out of. You know, you might want to look at the data sheet, bills of material and such, and product literature, right? So, and the key is also a good understanding of the end use, right? So where is it used, right? It could potentially be used with, in hospital, right? As a gown, right? Right away, it could be put, it could apply to duty reduction because it's used in the medical field, right? So those are some of the things that, you know, we take in consideration, or it should be taken in consideration for classification purposes, right? So.
And I think what happens too, and to Sebastian's point, is the customs tariff, there's so many different classifications. And when goods are getting classified at the time of import, it's basically the description or the part number that's on that document that drives the classification. Meaning when the broker's clearing goods for clients, they basically will build a database. And we know that many related parties, they talk in acronyms. We see it all the time. We'll see an item that's being imported. It's an LC34. Well, what is an LC34? Well, they've claimed it as a metal rack. Well, let's look at it and see if it is a metal rack. And as we do research and we look into it, we find that it's a plastic container. So I think it's also important to try to educate importers to maybe have their vendors put more detailed descriptions of what these goods are that will help them get better classified. And even though we do have a detailed description, doesn't mean that it's going to be accurate. So it really is, it's interpretation. Like, what do we think it is? How do we think it's used? And then we use all of the various tools that we have, not just the customs tariff, but chapter notes and explanatory notes and previous customs rulings. Classification definitely is, as you said, Jim, it's a tricky, very tricky area.
Yeah, I mean, it's no wonder mistakes are made in putting the classification on when the goods originally cross, because it is so complicated. And a lot of times, sometimes even the level of assembly of an item, you know, like if I ship a tabletop and four legs, is that the same as shipping a table? And you're going to ask me, well, what kind of table is it? Because it makes a difference, right? It's Is it a wooden Absolutely. Table? Is it a metal table? Is it a plastic table? So is it a toy table for a child?
Is it a surgical table?
Exactly. Yeah, is it got a medical use? So very, very tricky stuff. I know you guys are the experts at weeding through all that and getting down to the proper classification. And I guess sometimes that works out, right? To the importer's advantage, because, you know, it's easy to overpay due to a wrong classification. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it can go the other way too, right? It could be compliance too. So they could be underpaying as well.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Now, with that in mind, I think one of you mentioned it already, and I had heard rumors, but what's this about a CBSA hit list? Like what is a hit list?
Yep. So what happens is CBSA comes out usually on an annual basis. It's part of the trade compliance verification. And Sebastian touched on this. And what they're trying to do, obviously, well, we have certain classifications within the customs tariff that, again, you'll have maybe three or four different classifications for similar items. And they're finding when they're doing their audits that there's a high error rating on this. So what they do is they come up with these items, and on the hit list right now, we've got things like LED lamps, we've got batteries, we've got women's footwear,
furniture's
on there. And what happens is sometimes the importers or the brokers will just gravitate to the lowest duty rate. And this is where this compliance verification comes in. And they'll do various types of these verifications. They do what's called desk audits. So they'll go in, CBSA has access, obviously, to all of the data. They'll go in and find those classification numbers. Then they can go in and then also find the importers that are using those classification numbers. And then the letters start going out. They will want to know the exact transaction numbers of where these classifications were used. So they will, in their letter, they will ask for 10 samples, and they've got the classification, they've got the transaction number. So they want samples of the entry, samples of the commercial invoice. They'll probably want the purchase order. They want specifications and so on. And this is where this comes into play. And it continues for what we call numerous rounds. So I think some of these, correct me if I'm not wrong here, Sebastian, but some of them, I believe, are up to five rounds,
which means, you know, they've kind of been extending it year over year, you know, because they see more and more imports and more and more infractions, if you want to call them that way, right? So misclassifications, so, you know, that they want to take a closer look at, so.
Yeah, and then what they'll do is they'll have the total number of companies that they looked at, what the error rating was, and they capture all of these statistics. And obviously, if the error rating is still high, then they'll open it up to another round two and so on and so on. So there's numerous products that are on this hit list. And it's kind of interesting. And we always, when we go in and do our review, and it's one of the things that we do discuss with our clients if any of their items are on there.
In addition to the
tariff classification on the list itself, there's origin verifications as well. So CBSA will focus on importers that strictly import from European nations, Canada and Europe or EU currently is under a trade agreement, which is called CETA. So they want to do a verification of some sort to see if the goods actually qualify. So they'll target importers that import from Germany per se, you know what I mean? And ask for samples and start digging in to kind of conduct a little bit more verification, right? So, or a U.S. origin per se, you know, last year we had introduction of the new U.S.-Canada free trade agreement. So a lot of importers are still quite new to it. Still don't quite understand the rules and regulations. A lot has changed within the agreement itself. So they could be targeting those next year as well. So.
Yeah. And then also, Sebastian, too, that's a good point, that's really one of the main targets too of NAFTA or other trade agreements is that when they do investigate a vendor, pick a vendor in the US, and it's identified and determined that the goods do not qualify, CBSA also has access to all of the other importers that are importing from that vendor.
Yeah.
So there they go, and that also get some, they get letters sent out as well, and it's determined that the goods don't qualify, so they then have to pay the duty on those items.
Very interesting. So basically the CBSA knows exactly where the difficult spots are in terms of classification and potentially origin. And so they actually look for goods that have come in, been cleared under those categories to try to make sure that it's been done correctly. Is that sort of a summary? Very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that, is that list published?
It is. Yes. Yeah. It's on the same website, compliance verification.
Very good. Yeah. We'll have to definitely get a copy of that or a link to that put up on our own website, but very, very interesting discussion. We don't have a lot of time left, but I want to give each of you a chance to just offer one piece of advice to anyone who's listening to the podcast. You know, how can their organization, you know, improve their customs compliance and, you know, avoid potential issues like, you know, undervaluing something and having to pay a penalty on it later, or potentially missing a potential recovery, basically overpaying duty. You know, just real quick, any advice for those listening to the podcast?
I would have to say that
invest in internal processes. You know, perhaps establish a customs department, hire a customs expert, you know, to do the review, do the customs review, as well as perhaps even enroll in different programs available to the imported through customs, you know, as an example, customs self-assessment, CSA, or perhaps even a PIP program, you know what I mean? So that's something that could alleviate a lot of headache for the importer, and perhaps even a verification or an audit by CBSA. You just want to prove that you are a trusted trader, that you know your supply chain, you know where your goods are made from, and what country they're imported from. And you're assigning the right tariff classification, your valuation is at par, you're paying the right amount of duty and taxes, right? So kind of like, you know, perhaps just, you know, internal processes. I think that's the key, you know, to avoid any of the non-compliance.
So. Very good. Go ahead, Maureen.
We used to always suggest to a lot of our clients, because many can't afford and they don't have the manpower to have a customs department. But one of the things we used to say is that you could put a little procedure in place, maybe quarterly, semi-annually. And again, you would just pull 5 receiving reports, try to match those receiving reports up to the client documentation, the purchase order, the commercial invoice. And are there any areas that aren't linked, that aren't speaking to each other, where adjustments would have had to have been made? And then at that point, you might want to just provide your customs broker with some more detailed information, you know, whether it be, you know, a catalog. Again, they're looking at all of these acronyms. They don't really know what the items are. Just working more closely with your customs broker to provide more up-to-date information, because they're building your database over the years. And if you've been importing for years, more than likely you've got some obsolete items that are in there that no longer need to be there.
Good advice. And Jolene, I guess last word to you.
Well, Sebastian and Maureen already sum up very nicely. But I think another thing that come to my mind is CBSA is offering a lot of seminar or webinar. So importers should periodically check on CBSA website for all these free webinar or even seminar, and try to attend or listen to it, so that, you know, it's... it allows them to stay abreast of all the latest changes, because the custom rules and regulation is always changing and updating. So it's always good to know what is going on, like especially the last, 4 years ago, when Canada introduced their free trade agreement with the Europe trade partners. So I think a lot of importers was not aware of this free trade. So did not take advantage of their goods when, you know, it might qualify for this free trade status. So all this information is always constantly changing and updating. And I think importers should pay attention and maybe try to check out CBSA website periodically for all these new updates. Or even sign up with IE Canada. So they, I believe they have daily notice with all the latest changes to the customs rules and regulation and all the free trades that is implemented or maybe even upcoming. So I think this is one good way to keep in touch with all the latest changes with customs regulations.
Yeah, really good point. And I'll actually use this opportunity to plug our own website and let people know that we definitely do put major changes as tax developments on our website. And you can access that at ryan.com/Canada/news and insights. And certainly if you want to reach any of today's presenters, you can do it either through the website or their first name, last name at ryan.com. In Sebastian's case, I would probably use the website because you're not going to be able to spell his last name correctly. But great information, everyone. Maureen, Sebastian, Jolene, thanks for taking the time to talk about customs duty and the importance of compliance. It was very informative.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
That concludes this episode of Ryan Talks Tax and a Little Customs. As I just mentioned, for all the latest developments in Canadian tax, customs, and government funding initiatives, check out our website at ryan.com/Canada/news and insights. And let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your questions or comments to webinars@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.